The Board of Directors, Monterey Bay Resources District. We have the Pledge of Allegiance first.
Somebody needs to turn off their. You have a laptop, please mute it.
And a little bit of reverb. Call, please.
All right. Vice Chair Kosmicki.
Here.
Director Carbon. Director Perez. Absent. Director Friend. Absent. Director Labar.
Present.
Director Chair Lopez. Director Sonio.
Here.
Thank you. Director Eskew.
Here, I'm remote.
Thank you. Director Adams. Absent.
Sorry to interrupt, but it looks like we may have lost Mayor Labar, which is our core. Oh,
there he is.
You're there.
I'm still here.
Okay, sorry. Your little box went away, so I thought we lost you.
Okay, I will return to Director Adams is absent. Next, Director Hernandez, absent. Director Brown, here. Two, three, four, five, six. We just have quorum, sir.
Great. Council, did you want to mention the remote factor?
Yeah, I can make some announcements with regard to our remote attendance. Mayor Labar is attending from King City Council Chambers, and his location is listed on the agenda. Supervisor Root Askew is attending under the AB 2449 Just Cause exception. She's in Sacramento traveling while on official business. That's her role as supervisor. And can you both confirm for me that you're the only people over 18 in the location you're at?
I can confirm that I'm alone in a hotel room at the Hyatt Regency outside of the CSOC conference. I'm alone in the room.
And yes, no members of the public, no one under 18 as well in the council chambers at this notice location.
Great, thanks. We'll make sure we take roll call vote today since you are both remote. And if you could both please keep your cameras on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us to item four, public comment. This is for items not on the agenda and cannot exceed 3 minutes, and we cannot take action on these items. Do we have public comment?
It's raised online, nothing received at the district office, and no hands raised in the boardroom.
Thank you, Siri. That brings us to item five, reports by committee chairs on committee meetings. So first, I guess, budget, personnel, and nominating committee. We just held that meeting a few minutes ago and completed it. And we did approve a recommendation to bring the budget forward that will be on the agenda. And I would say that was probably the main issue that we put on there. And we also... as will be on the agenda coming up, we made a recommendation for filling a vacancy on the committee. Are there any others? Any other reports? Thank you very much. That'll take us to item six, comments and referrals from chair and board members. Do we have any comments and referrals from board members? Hearing none, that'll take us to item seven, report from our air pollution control officer. Rich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Just to fill in, the advisory committee did meet on April 4th this month. We did not have a quorum, however, but we continued meeting in an informal capacity. Basically, the advisory committee received a report on AB 2766, which is the same report that the board will receive today. Their comments have been incorporated in today's presentation. In engineering compliance, just want to let the board know that we've posted a public notice for issuing an authority to construct for the Constellation Brands Gonzales Winery for installation of an ethanol tank, which triggered Rule 207 offset requirements. The notice and evaluation are available for review on our website, and we're accepting comments on that authority to construct until May 5th. Four inspectors successfully received visual emissions evaluation certification in April. And VEE is a method for quantifying pollution plumes based on its visibility to the human eye. So our inspectors actually get calibrated, and that stands up in court. It's really important that these guys pass. It's a very difficult field exam to pass. The hearing board will be meeting on April 22, and one action will be to review and approve an update to the hearing board regulation. We plan to bring the updated regulation for the board approval in June. We're still seeking new hearing board members in the medical profession and a registered engineer. To that end, I did contact the health officer in Monterey County and let him know that we're looking for medical professionals to participate. So hopefully that will get us an additional member. Updating as of this morning, there are now 6 marina odor complaints that we've received since the February board meeting. This is sort of the time of year we see this. Meteorological conditions are ripe and right for a lot of these odors. So we distribute those complaints to the appropriate respondents and authorities. In planning and air monitoring, this is really great news, and we'll be making more hay of this in the future, but we will be receiving a $2.2 million grant from an advanced technology demonstration and pilot project from CARB, the California Air Resources Board. The project, which is titled Building Monterey Bay's First Hybrid Electric Whale Watching Vessel Project. So this is a collaboration with Monterey Bay Echo Tours out of Moss Landing. And the grant will fund the construction of a custom built boat by Left Coast Construction. It will be a Coast Guard certified to carry 49 passengers for year round whale watching excursions out of the Moss Landing Harbor. The 57 foot long catamaran will have electric inboard motors with emergency backup diesel powered generators to meet Coast Guard safety requirements. The project will include renewable energy sources through rooftop solar panels to trickle charge the batteries, and grant funding comes from California Climate Investments. So we'll do ribbon cuttings or whatever we can do to make sure we're well noticed. The ship will also have our logo on it as well. The 2023 Wood Stove Changeout Program, which launched on December 14th, is ongoing. This provides propane and natural gas replacement devices, which are no longer included, but it provides for electric and wood-to-wood changeouts. Incentive amounts range from about $2,500 and double for low-income qualified applicants, and also up to $5,000 for wood to heat pump changeouts. Our landscape equipment exchange program, LEAP, was launched on November 6th. It's the providing commercial and residential operations with incentives to replace old combustion landscape equipment with new cordless zero emission devices. We've got about $315,000 in project funds for our commercial program, and an additional $80,000 was redirected from Moyer program funds to cover the residential program. So far, 105 pieces of lawn and garden equipment have been replaced with about $80,000 of these funds obligated. On April 9th, an electric school bus was delivered to the Santa Cruz City Schools as part of MBARD's Zero Emission School Bus Program. This program provides grant funding to local school districts to assist with purchasing electric buses and charging infrastructure. We received this through the DM fees as authorized by AB 923. And Santa Cruz City Schools was granted a $174,000 grant from the Zero Emission Bus Program, which was stacked with $140,000 from California's Hybrid Vehicle Voucher Program, HVIP. And with this combined funding, they actually get a free school bus. So that's really nice. And we will be having additional announcements. So look for that on our website and in the press. Speaking of which, community workshops, as you heard, were held in Hollister, Watsonville, and in this office for our budget. April newsletter will be published on Friday, April 18th in English and Spanish. That can be found online. April 22th, as everyone knows, is Earth Day. We'll be running print ads and special Earth Day publications, the Monterey County Herald, Salinas Valley Tribune, King City Rustler, Santa Cruz Good Times, and the April issue of the San Juan Bautista Mission Village Voice. And then we actually just we will be Earth Day, Saturday, April 13th, we will we participated in the 18th annual Earth Day celebration in Marina at the Marina Library. So thanks to staff that attended that and represented the district. And then this is a ways off, but please save the date for our 50th anniversary open house, which will be same day as the board meeting in August, Wednesday the 21st, immediately following the board meeting. That concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments from the board? Director LaBar?
Thank you. And I actually was gonna comment on item 12 on our consent agenda, but you just talked about it regarding the whale watching grant with that boat. Very, very cool. My question is, so Left Coast Composite, are they local or somewhere else with on our coastline?
Thank you, Director LaBar. They are actually headquartered out of Seattle. That's where most of the major boat building operations are situated.
Okay. And I'm assuming all of the products, all the rough materials they're going to use to build it will be from suppliers up in that area. We don't have anyone in our area that they could have used for the supply chain issue.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any composite manufacturers in our area that would be providing materials to boat building operations in Seattle. But
all right. Not a problem. Still a awesome program. It was just, it would have been nice to be able to, there was that local business component as well. But thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Director. I just had a couple quick things. Just on top of what he mentioned about the whale watching, I think it might be good to get, you know, additional outreach beyond the ribbon cutting, the media outlets. It sounds like something that they might be interested in, positive news for the district. And then the landscape equipment, so 80,000 out of the total has been.
Yes.
So is there, maybe we can sort of recycle PR on that as well, just to kind of remind folks of that, because we don't want to get to the end of the year and do we have a deadline?
We do, I believe we have a couple of years to spend down that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we're well on the way. We have been redoubling our efforts, and I didn't mention that, but we've been on the radio and trying to run many more ads. And you know, we'll reassess. The program is fairly dynamic, so if we have to come back and do some adjustments to the incentive amounts, we'll do that.
Okay. And then you mentioned the odor complaints. I know I'd sent you one on Hollister. We don't have to go into it now, but maybe if you could communicate at some point when there's some sort of a, you know, anything to report on that. I appreciate
it. I did have an update on that. I took it off, but I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah. Can... Go ahead.
One question. I didn't hear anything about the electric bikes program. Did that funding run out, or is it coming back?
Yes, actually the funding, after the board reconfigured the incentive amounts and opened it up to the general public, funds were exhausted within a matter of weeks. So we had no problem giving that. As you recall, the intended target audience was the low-income community, and that's where we had difficult time giving the money away. We'll give an additional update on our AB 2766 program, including recommendations, but we're currently working with other programs, the City of Santa Cruz, as well as or through RTC and Living Better Lives. We're assisting with hopefully which will blossom into an electric bike loan program. So we're looking at other avenues to get e-bikes out into the community.
Thank you very much. Seeing no further comments, we'll move on to consent. This is for items not on the regular agenda. Are there any requests to pull items from consent? And do we have any public comment?
No comments online, nothing in the boardroom, and nothing received at the office.
Thank you very much. I'll entertain a motion to approve consent. And second?
I'll second.
All those in favor, roll call vote, please.
Aye. Vice Chair Kosmicki?
Yes.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Labar?
Aye.
Director Arsonio?
Yes.
Director Eskew?
Aye.
Director Brown?
Aye.
Approves unanimously.
Very much. That takes us to regular agenda. Item 14, consider and appoint one regular member from the board to the Budget Personnel Nominating Committee to replace an outgoing member per recommendation of the Budget Personnel Nominating Committee. You want to take that, Rich?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. As was discussed previously in the Budget Personnel Nominating Committee, we have to fill a vacancy created by Director Dolores Morales, who left the board. So that leaves one seat vacant on the committee. We currently have four members that are on your report. So that's Chris Lopez, the chair today, and Marianne and Mike Labar. We need to fill that vacancy. The committee nominated a primary and backup member. The primary member, if willing to participate, is Mary Adams. And if she's not willing to participate, and I guess Wendy's going to hear this for the first time, you've been selected as an alternate. If Mary Adams is not interested. So congratulations are in order. That's what happens if you don't make the meetings, but you're welcome to turn it down too. We can make adjustments. And for that committee, we need a quorum constitutes three individuals. So we made it today so we can function as long as we have folks participating. And we do have one alternate is also indicated on your report. That's Felipe Hernandez from Santa Cruz County.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment?
No public comments online. Nothing received at the, nothing in the boardroom.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, can I please entertain a motion?
I'll move that we
love the staff recommendation. Oh, or I'll second it.
Either way, I'll second.
Oh, ask you first.
First and a second. Yep. All right. All those in favor, roll call vote, please.
Right. Director Eskew.
Aye.
Director Brown.
Aye.
Director Arsonio. Yes. Director Labar.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kosmicki.
Yes.
Approved unanimously.
Takes us to item 15, adopt a resolution authorizing the air pollution control officer to apply a portion of AB 2766 revenues toward funding and implementing a program for motor vehicle emission reducing grants consistent with the 2425 AB 2766 emissions. That's Mr. Stedman as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. You're probably well aware of AB 2766. It's a longstanding grant program here at the district. In fact, this year is our 34th year administering this program. And today, and this may be repetitive with our presentation we're about to receive, but we've funded over $40 million to around 613 projects to yield emission reductions from motor vehicle emissions. So it's been a very successful program, a very popular program, and it has undergone many changes to make it a very cost-effective program as well. The main overview of this program is to provide direct emission reductions. In the past, we used to have some dubious awards to some projects that we couldn't really quantify the emission reductions. And I'm happy to say that over the years, we actually were able to improve the project. And with the board's help, we have a program that's relatively easy to administer. And we've broken it down into a few different programs within the grant itself. And for more information on that, we're going to turn to staff to provide a presentation, and that's Eli.
Good afternoon, Board of Directors. My name is Eli Lessman. I'm an air quality planner. I'm presenting information about the AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program. This program reduces motor vehicle emissions in our three counties. Is the volume okay? This is the 34th year of this program. MBART has awarded over $40 million, funding over 600 projects. In 1990, Assembly Bill 2766 was passed to provide a revenue stream for programs that reduce air pollution for motor vehicles and for necessary functions to implement the California Clean Air Act, including planning, monitoring, enforcement, and technical studies. Currently, MBART receives $4 for this program from every DMV vehicle registration. In fiscal year 24-25, there's approximately $1.6 million available, and those funds are to be distributed according to the population of our three counties. Initially, projects were just for cities, counties, and public entities. In the past 8 years, we introduced an electric vehicle incentive program for residents, and we've put approximately 2,000 electric vehicles on the road by awarding over $3 million. The Clean Air Management Program is for public agencies to develop transportation and electrification infrastructure. The Clean Vehicle Program is for light, medium, and heavy duty clean vehicle projects. The light duty aspect is only for public agencies and nonprofits. And the medium and heavy duty is only for public agencies. The Electric Vehicle Incentive Program is for light duty vehicle projects for residents. And on the bottom, you can see the definition of light duty is 10,000 pounds and less. Medium and heavy duty vehicles are considered so for being greater than 10,000 pounds. Here you can see five community air management program projects and seven clean vehicle program projects from fiscal year 23-24. The grouping here is by county, with Monterey on top and Santa Cruz in the middle. The takeaway here on the bottom is that MBART offered over $1.5 million and that the total requested funds were above $3 million. I'll hold here for a few seconds. I will highlight a few of these projects in a couple slides. This is a further breakdown of fiscal year 23-24 by county. This is funds by population. According to the 2020 census, San Benito County had a population of approximately 64,000. That's 8% of the total population of our three counties. And that's respectively 104,000. And you can see the same information for Santa Cruz County in red and Monterey County in blue. This is a breakdown of the total funds requested. Between Santa Cruz County and Monterey County, over $3 million were requested. There were no applications submitted by San Benito County. These are the total funds awarded. Santa Cruz County was awarded $510,000, 32% of the total. Monterey County, just over $1 million, 68% of the total. From fiscal year 23-24, this is the Sand City Multi-Use Trail and Bike Lane Improvements Project, funded at $205,000. And on the left, you can see Del Monte Boulevard in Sand City. The light green line and the yellow line are proposed and improved bike trails. And the light green star in the far lower left, that will be a newly formed first connection between the Monterey Recreational Trail and the MST surface and a bus line that connects the rest of the region. This is the Monterey Salinas Electric Bus Project, funded at $400,000. It's a replacement project of a 2007 diesel bus that drove over 100,000 miles annually. This is the Laurelis Grade Roundabout Project, funded at $200,000. It'll provide a reduced delay time and idling time, ensuring reduced emissions. For fiscal year 24-25, this is a breakdown of funds by population. According to the 2022 census survey, San Bernardino County had a population of approximately 67,000. That's 9% of the total population of our three counties, and respectively, it's $108,000. And you can see the same information for Santa Cruz County and Monterey County as well. So these are the three community air management program, the three AB 2766 programs for fiscal year 24-25. So between the community air management program and the clean vehicle program, there's approximately $1.2 million in funds, almost entirely for public agencies. For fixed assets, for transportation and electrification infrastructure, and medium and heavy-duty clean vehicle projects, we're looking at a max per project of $200,000 when it was $400,000. Decreasing the cap will allow more people an opportunity to participate. In the clean vehicle program for light duty vehicles, both public agencies and nonprofits are welcome to apply. And we're looking at increasing the incentive to $20,000 when it was $10,000. And for used light duty, we're looking at an increased incentive of $15,000 when it was $5,000. Increasing the incentive will help with participation and respond to increases in MSRP. With the electric vehicle incentive program, we're looking at $400,000 in project funds. And on the lower right, you'll see the incentive amounts per applicant per category for fiscal year 24-25. It's slightly reduced from last year. Last cycle for a new battery electric, we were looking at a $2,000. And for a new plug-in hybrid and electric motorcycle, we were looking at $1,000. If we slightly reduce our incentive amounts per applicant, we'll better spread the project funds among the general public, and we'll still retain high enthusiasm and participation. And I think this is complementary with what the advisory board shared, that while emission reductions achieved through electric vehicle programs is effective, the incentive isn't as necessary as it used to be. Continuing the electric bike incentive program may provide redundancy. The California Air Resource Board is establishing the California e-bike incentive project for spring 2024. Qualifying applicants may receive a $1,000 and up to a $2,000 incentive. Also, MBART is supporting the Go Santa Cruz County Bicycle Incentive Program with AB 2766 funds. Qualifying applicants may receive a $400 and up to an $800 incentive. And if an applicant and a bike is eligible for both programs, the incentives are stackable, and the max one could receive is $2,800. Putting another local incentive on top of that could cause awards to exceed bike prices. Importantly, we should focus on project options that simply have better emission reduction metrics. Here's an overview of the proposed changes. For the electric vehicle incentive program, we're looking at increasing the total project funds from $350,000 to $400,000 and lowering the incentive amounts per applicant. And for public agencies and nonprofits, we're looking at increasing the incentive for light duty vehicles from $10,000 to $20,000. For fixed assets and medium and heavy duty vehicle projects, we're looking at lowering the max per project from 400,000 to 200,000. And also roundabouts and traffic signal control projects will no longer be eligible. Thank you. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. We'll go to public comment first.
Raised online, nothing received at the district office, and no one here.
Great. Questions and comments from the board. I see we have two. We have Director Eskew.
I think Mike had to stand up first. I'll defer to him and come after.
Director Labar.
Thank you, Chair. A couple questions on this, the CVP program and how it relates to the residential component of it. So we're offering per project max on light duty vehicles, 20,000 for new and 15,000 for used. Is a project, is that like you can use that for one vehicle?
Per project, per vehicle.
Per vehicle. So I don't understand a couple components. One is that they must replace the vehicle. And I would question, is that something that's through the legislation that authorizes these grant funds that they must replace?
The rationale behind there being a replacement is that there's a removal of the combustion equipment. It's no longer traveling, and that we're introducing the electric vehicle. But in our proposed guidelines, we did ensure that there would be a case-by-case approval for operations that would need to hold on to their equipment to complete necessary functions that they're responsible for.
Okay, that's great. I think that flexibility is very important because it's more, but to me, it's more about the transitioning to the vehicle and moving forward from there, and something that they just bought 5 years ago and it still has five more years of life. But what I don't understand is a public agency or a nonprofit, they get $20,000 towards a new light duty electrical vehicle, but a resident could only get $2,500. And that doesn't make sense to me. What is the rationale behind that? Or
yeah, I may, if I can ask Director Labar. In the past, we've actually been paying for cities and counties and public entities the full purchase price of an electric vehicle. And that was to induce the changeover in public fleets. That's one area where we really wanted to concentrate our resources. So we actually, over the years, reduced that amount down to $10,000 per vehicle. And we saw that we were getting not very many takers on this, so we decided to increase that amount and effectively double it. So with the provision that, similar to all other combustion incentive programs, ranging from farm vehicles to lawn mowing equipment to even cash for clunker type of programs, typically, replacement of the combustion device is required to receive full funding. But certainly, this is a draft of the program, and we're open to any suggestions that you may have. But we've been having a difficult time with cities and counties and other public entities availing themselves of what's pretty generous, and we have a limited amount of cities and counties as opposed to our general population. So with $400,000, we really couldn't fund very many vehicle replacements to the public like we have thus far.
Okay, and I thank you for that clarification. I can understand that. My only thought would be that we've already heard discussions where our electrical vehicle incentive program for the residential side, the public, was quickly used up. And to hear that our public agencies and nonprofits are not utilizing those funds, to me, it would seem to reduce the amount available to the public agencies and nonprofits and take those dollars and apply them for additional resources on the residential side, because they seem to be using it faster. Even if it was at the same rates that were listed within this presentation, because I thought we went through within like 3 or 6 months all of the funds available on the residential side. So to me, that seems there's more demand there, and I'd rather see those dollars applied there. Public agencies aren't going to avail themselves. Let's get it to people who do. So that's my only comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Other comments, questions? Director Eskew?
Thank you. Lots of good information, and it's a great program. I've actually really appreciated the chance to read about how other jurisdictions use their AB 2766 dollars, and how CARB as an organization has really started looking into the e-bike program and model. The 2024 program that they're looking to roll out, I think, is really exciting. So I'll start with those sort of background comments. And I also appreciate that the e-bike, the change in staff recommendation for the e-bike program was called out specifically in the slide that we had in the presentation today. I did note, though, that it wasn't referenced in the staff report at all. And as we've put this program out to our community, I know that it really has become something that people that has generated excitement and interest among a growing number of individuals. By not including any reference to the staff recommendation to not include funding for the e-bikes in the staff report, I think it limited, prevented some folks from knowing that this is where that decision gets made in this item today. So I think it would have been great to have had that called out specifically so that people had the advance notice and would have the chance to speak, you know, let us know what their thoughts are about this before we take action on that. I also wanted to, in the slide that was referenced, there was reference to that there's no metrics available for the reduction of GHG emissions when it comes to e-bike incentives. And we had this conversation originally, but I beg to differ. I think that the data that is available from the University of Portland research that's been done does show that there is reason to believe that especially e-bikes with their range and accessibility to a larger number of people do have the potential and ability to reduce GHG emissions and prevent people from having to purchase cars or those who don't have the multiple cars in their family to increase their ability to get around. I think this is especially relevant as we talk about the state's direction to all of our local jurisdictions to be building additional housing and preventing cities and local jurisdictions from putting parking minimums on housing that is within certain areas within a community. So for instance, we're gonna be asked to approve a specific plan in East Garrison that increases, puts an additional 70 units of affordable housing. And those units won't necessarily have parking designated beyond one unit, even though we know that the number of people in those properties are significant. So I know that's happening in my district specifically. I presume that that's happening. And I think we know that that's also happening throughout our region. The last sort of comment that I'll make in an argument to say that I think we should continue to fund the e-bike incentive program at least through 2024 is that the fact that the California Air Resource Board, the CARB program, designed a program to start incentivizing e-bikes. It literally it speaks to the recognition that there is a GHG emission reduction worthy of investment. That program, because it hasn't rolled out and isn't currently offering incentives yet for a number of other budgetary reasons, I think that we should continue to offer our program that we have and fully expended. I do think that I supported the idea of having an income restriction on that initially, and I think we just needed a little more time to reach the communities that would be able to continue to benefit from that. But whether it's with an income restriction or without an income restriction, I think the fact that the funds were depleted so quickly once the income limit was lifted indicates that there is a desire and an interest from our community. So it's a relatively small amount of money compared to the total amount of our AB 2766 funds. And I think there's good evidence from what I'm reading that shows that e-bikes do have potential for GHG reductions. And I think that's something that we should continue investing in until CARB gets a program for the California state up and running. Thank you.
So if I may respond, Chair. Thank you for your comments, Director. I completely agree with you. There's no argument if you compare an e-bike to a vehicle, a gas-powered vehicle, that the data is clear. However, the data is not clear here. We have had a very difficult time in this community trying to get and justify emission reductions from just regular bicycles. We embarked paying Ambag some $60,000 or $100,000 to do a study to look at local patterns of traffic and displacement with bicycles and commuting. And we really didn't get any good emission factor data there either. So the key is the local community. And I have no doubt that if somebody rides their electric bike, it's lower emissions than a vehicle. That's not the point. The point is that we can't really justify that with local data. And maybe this isn't the right program where we should house this project. In fact, I'm concerned that if we have to demonstrate to the state that we are getting emission reductions, that we don't have any of that data to prove this. So I will commit, I think that bicycles and e-bikes are the future. I just heard a story, it was today or yesterday, about Paris, how they've gone to a bike economy, and they're significantly reducing not only greenhouse gases, but the pollutants we care about are criteria pollutants. We don't regulate greenhouse gases, but there are certainly co-benefits with reducing those. So we do have a clean air fund that has money. We also are collecting money from East Garrison when they build that out, and we could apply those funds to a bike program. As I mentioned earlier too, we're looking at working with people that are active in the local communities to provide them funds necessary to have an e-bike loan program or something like that. So by taking this away, I'll just remind the board that we were fully funded at $400,000 for electric vehicles. We took $50,000 of that to start a pilot program for the bicycle project. And there was considerable debate at our last meeting about the efficacy of the bike program and so forth. So in discussions with the folks that were in our advisory committee and so forth, we took it that the money would be better spent in the electric vehicle program, but we don't want to abandon bicycles. And where we can come up with funding to pay for projects in the community, we're all about that. So I think it depends on the merits of the project. It has been an absolute nightmare for us to manage this project for the small dollar amounts and the amount that we're dealing with the public. And there's a pretty, let's just say that the opportunities for fraud were really pretty high with this program as well. And so at the end of the day, in protecting the interests of the agency and spending down this program funds, we think it might be better to displace that and put those in other programs that we have less requirements or fewer requirements to justify. So I will make the commitment that if we have a good electric bike program, we can take monies out of our Clean Air Fund, which is we take 20% of our fines and penalties and automatically include that into our fund. And so we currently would have monies to pay for, the $50,000 that we're using. So I don't know if that helps, but taking it out of AB 2766, I think protects the district in the long run.
Director Skeen.
Thank you. Thank you for that commitment and just the recognition and helping us figure out where the right places to fund these things might end up being. I will just note, I've looked at other air management districts and specifically the the South Coast Air Quality Management District does include e-bikes as qualified expenditures for AB 2766. So I think we've got some good arguments if we were questioned on the point, but I appreciate that it has been challenging for the district, and I'm totally open and would love to have us continue the conversation about how we can have a program that actually is easier for the district to administer and targets those dollars, maybe in partnership with low-income housing developments where we know housing is being built with limited parking, to get those e-bikes into the hands of people who are going to benefit from them most and achieve the outcomes that we're here to achieve. So thank you for that, your comments, Richard. I really appreciate your willingness to think through how we can structure this.
No, I think it's important. And it's also important to recognize that South Coast, they get billions of dollars from the $4, and they don't administer the grants. They have a lot of transportation authorities where the money goes. It's stipulated by law. So although the funds may be, they're allowing other people to implement the program, which is what I'm saying our recommendation would be here. Like, as you know, Living Better Lives, that a group may benefit and be better at distributing bikes than the agency can ever be. So, and we can actually help leverage the monies, I think, a little more effectively if we can find somebody who's willing to develop programs specific to their communities.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? And do other directors have thoughts on either suggestion from Director Askew or Director Labar, as far as just to recite it again, Director Labar suggested perhaps increasing the residential, and also we might want to know from staff what impact that would have on how that might be administered, and as, you know, as far as comparing it with the 20,000, we'd obviously would have to lower the $20,000 amount if we adjusted the residential.
I would be happy to entertain a dollar amount that the board would like to see. We've increased it trying to incentivize a fleet changeover in cities and counties. But we could go back to $10,000 and then put the balance of those monies into the EV incentive program. Or we could eliminate the money to all of the cities and counties, if that's this board's pleasure, and put that money back into the electric vehicle incentive program for residents.
Thoughts? Go ahead.
Yes, so I'm thinking of my city. And we do not have an electric vehicle. So I'm wondering about which cities do and which cities do not have EVs. And, you know, I don't know if I need to bring this like to my city. So I would say that I would like to still see the possibility that public agencies could get incentivized by, you know, through MBARD, through a rebate. And if that's not the case, you know, I do know that you have to put in the infrastructure for the EVs as well, that we don't have. So that would be a question to bring back to my council. And I do know that it is mandated that they have to do this by a certain year. So whether it's, I don't want to put it on anybody's back there at the city through administration or whatever. But I think that, you know, we should still have the possibility of doing that. And then if at a certain time, you know, if those funds aren't used, that, you know, we bring this back to the board and look at it within a certain time. And it would be whether you give them, I don't know how long this is good for, if it's a 2 year or 1 year, a certain amount of time, and then to bring it back to the board.
Okay, any others? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just make a couple of comments here, responding to Director Askew's point, you know, about the, really, I agree that we should be providing support for electric bikes in some form. I also recognize the administrative burden. We've talked about this quite a bit. as well as the potential to partner with organizations like Living Well.
Better Lives.
Thank you. And there are many of those right across our various jurisdictions. And so with the caveat that there may be other ways to support that, I feel comfortable with the staff recommendation today. I don't want to lose sight of, you know, that potential. And with respect to the question of shifting the money from public agencies towards the incentive program for individuals, my perspective comes from representing a city where we have, you know, MBART has been tremendously helpful in our efforts to transition our fleet. Some of the vehicles we've been able to get have been as a result of that support. And I highly recommend Director Carbone that you you talk with your city about it. It's yet we are still so far behind where we want to be. There, you know, the limited resources that public agencies have for these kinds of this transition. I think it's really important that that funding be available for community. You know, we talk about community readiness as one of the, or kind of grantee or recipient readiness, and public agencies are ready. You know, I think now many are, and others coming along. So I think I'm comfortable with the recommendation that you have put forward. I wouldn't make a motion to change it, but I'll see what others think.
Go ahead.
If I can really respond really quick. So a little historical perspective is important here. There was a time where we did not give any money to the public, and all the money went to public entities such as counties, cities, fire departments, and the like. It's only several years ago when we opened up the public, we had substantial growing pains, and staff has developed an automated program now that makes dispensing this. I won't say it's easy. It's very difficult. It takes a lot of work for us to do this program. So the administrative costs are relatively high. We try to keep them as low as possible, and I think we're really efficient. I would also say that we're the only district that I'm aware of that has a bicycle program. Notwithstanding what was mentioned about South Coast, they say that's allowed for, but I'm not aware of any programs that are actually doing that. There may be some, but no other district that I'm aware of outside of South Coast is doing a bicycle program. No, very few other districts are actually giving money to this AB 2766 money. They are not granting it to either the public or to public entities. Most districts are using it for in-house expenses. Now, we've been sued on this topic in the past, and we are following state guidelines, which says that the money received through AB 2766, the $4 per vehicle, half of that is to be used for grant programs and half is to be used for the implementation of the Clean Air Act with those programs that Eli mentioned in the beginning. So we've been doing that since the inception of the program. We did sort of bite off a big one when we opened it up to the general public. So it's a lot easier to administer these programs because most cities and counties have people working on these grants, and it's you know, a couple signatures and we're good to go. So it has been put quite an administrative burden. That's why we would prefer to work with community groups and the like, and we can reduce our expenses and help leverage costs out there in the community. I don't want to abandon e-bikes or bicycles. That is not the intent. I'm an avid cyclist. That would be the last thing I'd want to see happen. But I think it's rather dubious for this particular program to be including that. And then lastly, I'll just say I am really encouraged that with this program, we've been able to do some connectivity in the bike paths themselves. So you saw the grant referenced earlier. We have a lot of bike paths that go to nowhere, and it makes it very difficult for commuters to get to where they need to go. So as we now have opened up our funding opportunities to some of these projects that are connecting bike paths, I think that's going to be really part of the package, if you will, as we move forward with integrating bikes into our commuter traffic. So I'll shut up now, but this is a sensitive topic and I appreciate all the input. I guess we can come back at a later date and give you a workup of what we're thinking relative to the giving money to state cities and counties versus residents. I still don't have a number, so I'm not sure what, if somebody wants to throw something out, a recommendation, we can work up the numbers based on that.
Anything else? Director LeBar?
Yes, so maybe this will help on that. Where I'm, just to be clear, the residential portion of it, the electric vehicle incentive program, used its money up very, very quickly. And the recommendation for increasing from 10,000 to 20,000 for public agencies, because public agencies weren't utilizing it as much. So I'm fine in this sense. If we're trying to incentivize public agencies to adopt, go towards the zero emissions pathway, what I think I'd be more comfortable is we have 200,000 maximum for that portion, the CVP. If we run out of the electrical B incentive, the EVP program dollars in 3 months, and there's still $150,000 left in the CVP, then we transfer $50,000 from that program to electrical vehicle program, so we can keep momentum going. If the public agencies use all that money quick, great, then the incentive works. But at least this way, you keep the incentive that you're trying to encourage them to use. But if they're not using it, let's get those dollars into the hands of those that are ready to use it and keep the EV portion, the EVP program moving forward. That's where I would like to see. And I just want to, I'll just leave it there. So we could leave it at the 20,000 and the 15,000, as long as if one program gets used up, the EVP, we can transfer 50,000 from that the CVP program back into the EVP program.
I only just have one thought. If there aren't any other thoughts, I'd be willing to compromise, but could we maybe do 6 months as opposed to three? That's basically half the year as opposed to a quarter, because a quarter of the year is...
Oh, no. I'm only using the example of how fast the program used its dollars up. It was like 3 or 4 months in the EVP program. All the dollars were used up.
Oh, okay. Well, they're consulting real quick, Mike. Sorry. Okay.
No problem. I was just thinking that that's the trigger.
Go ahead. Okay.
We're fine. So I'm looking forward to the motion.
Can I ask a question before we... before that we hear that motion?
So in terms of how public agencies who apply for funding for the program, how that process works, my sense is that it's not on the same, you know, just first come, first serve, get your application in and you get your award. There's a process, and it takes some time. And so I'm just wondering how long it takes for that portion of the pot to be distributed, and how much of that is about, you know, the public agency readiness versus just the hoops that must be, you know, jumped through to do it.
So I'll let either Eli or Dave speak this, but we have deadlines for applications, which sort of cut it off so it's not strung out. We can be somewhat flexible with that, but.
So I guess I'm just trying to figure out, think about how a potential transfer from one pot to another would work. If we, you know, at what point do, you know, 3 months time, we've spent out the EV rebate money, the other money is here, but there's a application process. And so it hasn't been spent encumbered, but it's not because there isn't demand. So I guess that's where I'm just trying to think about how it would work, Director Labar's proposal would work operationally.
Being that it's an annual program, normally the application cycle is the month of May through June. We extended it a little bit this year to July, through a little bit of July, to give more opportunity for public agencies. In the past, participation has been low, maybe because the incentives have been too low. Since January 1st, 2024, the California Air Resource Board's Advanced Clean Fleet Rule has been in effect. So most public agencies are required to make all new medium, heavy duty, and some light duty vehicle projects purchases be zero emission purchases. So this increased incentive will help them meet those requirements.
Right. Yes. So I guess then just to say, could we say if the application, this round of applications is, you know, under, you know, the demand is under, then we might consider making that transfer?
Sure. I have authority to do a certain amount of transfer. If you want it brought back to the board, that would be part of the motion. If you want to authorize me to make that determination, I'm happy to do so. I just also, without going into oratory here again, you know, we've been playing around with a set of amounts since this program began. And we actually had 1 or 2 years where we didn't get a good response to the public because we were only, I believe it was $1,000 or $1,500 per vehicle, and people said it's not worth their time. So when we upped that amount, we went back, then we've got a good response. So finding that sweet spot, we're always sort of trying to see what works best, and that's what we're doing, quite honestly, with the public monies as well. So I'm happy to do, because your guess probably is as good as ours at this point, and we're happy to follow any kind of provisions you want to grant to us.
Go ahead.
Just one last comment. So I sit here as a representative of the mayor, so I will bring this back to the mayor's at their next meeting.
I'll just mention Seaside has a bunch of EVs. They're all Teslas too. We didn't pay for those as far as I'm concerned, but we have paid for a lot in Santa Cruz, and we paid for a lot of zero emission motorcycles for police departments because they're very silent and they really like those. So, you know, we have provided a lot of electric vehicles over the years to public entities.
Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
I think that hope. So the motion would be to accept staff's recommendation with the modification to the CVP and EVP program, that for the CVP program, after the application deadline has passed, any remaining funds would then be transferred to the EVP program.
Do I have a second?
Can I second that with a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Also, Mike, you can comment. Just that we also ask staff to explore alternative funding sources for ongoing investment in electric bicycle programming and to bring that back.
I would accept that, yes.
Thank you. That's my second with the additional friendly amendment.
If I may ask staff a question, your thoughts on the motion and how doable that is from a, you know, administrative side?
Normally the funds, the way we were looking at it is that funds that aren't utilized in CVP are of the community air management program. So the $1.2 million is for both the community air management program and CVP. That is, the distribution depends on the applications we get. So normally any remainder of CVP would just be community air management program projects. It's feasible to put a cap on that, and
we can make it work.
Okay. All right. Okay. We have a motion on the table. Can I please have a vote? Roll call.
Vice Chair Kosmicki?
Yes.
Director Carbone? Director Esonio? Director Askew?
Aye.
Thank you. Director Brown?
Aye.
Director Labar?
Aye.
Passed unanimously.
Thank you very much. Brings us to item 16, first public hearing to consider adoption of a resolution approving proposed revisions to the following fee rules and provide staff direction. We have, who will be taking that? Oh, there you are, Amy.
So I'm Amy, I'm the engineering compliance manager. Good afternoon, board of directors. I'll just be doing some highlights on the agenda item for our proposed fee rules. And each year with the budget, we propose fee increases, which triggers us to make some revisions to our fee rules. So there's three fee rules that I'll be going over today. So the highlights of the revisions are a potential fee increase of 2.6%, and this is based on the consumer price index for the San Francisco area. And in the next slides, I'll go over additional details of changes to Rule 300 and 306. So in Rule 300, there is a section that we're proposing to delete, and it was for a refund of renewal fees for non-operational periods. And we've had a hard time trying to even understand what this section meant, and so I went back and dug through our archives and found this was added to our rule in 2009, and it was intended to be used for major sources. And in 2017, we actually changed this rule and got rid of the definition and separate section discussing major sources and went to source-specific fee categories. So really in 2017, at that time, we should have also removed this provision in the rule. And so therefore, we're proposing to do that now. Next slide. So another thing we're proposing to do is to add, this is the source category section that replaced that major source section in Rule 300. And we're proposing to add an additional category called woodworking operations with no other permits. And back in 2018, we added a toxics fee to woodworking operations. And that was because we had a new regulation going into place at the state level for reporting criteria and toxics emissions. And at that time, we weren't sure whether these woodworking operations would get pulled into that regulation, how they might be addressed. So we decided at that time to add the toxics fee back onto those permits. But that rule's come out, it's been finalized, it's in effect. And we found that we do have 12 permits that the only thing they do is woodworking operations, which can have wood particulate matter with a control device to minimize that particulate matter from getting into the atmosphere. But that's not a toxics emission. And so for those 12 permits, we would like to add this separate category, which will exclude them from being assessed a toxics emissions fee. Next slide. And so here are just an example in our fee schedule of what does a 2.6% fee increase mean. And so these are some of our different types of fees, like a filing fee will increase to $6. An annual fee for an emergency diesel engine will increase from $408 to $419. So just to give a little perspective of what this means. So our Rule 306 is for the asbestos NESHAP, and that's the National Emission Standard for Hazardous Air Pollutants. And we're making some changes to that regulation to clarify that we typically receive a demolition or a renovation notification separately. The way it's worded in the rule now, it says single notification. Since we've moved to our online system of receiving these notifications, they do come in separately. So we're proposing these changes to align with our current practice. And then the same thing goes for emergency notifications. We also accept those online and accept payment at the time that notification is submitted. So there's no longer a need to wait for 5 days to receive those payments. And then this fee rule, just again, wanted to provide some examples of what a 2.6% increase means. So for a demolition fee, that would be a $13 increase. And then on the smallest category of regulated asbestos-containing material, that'll increase by $22. So as mentioned previously, we've received no public work comments at our public workshops in April, and we are accepting comments until June 7th. Those can be either emailed or sent in the mail to me. Next slide. And so our recommendation today is just to provide any additional direction to staff. Thank you. With that, I'll take any comments.
Great. Thank you. Any public comment?
No hands raised online. Nothing received at the office.
Questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, I think that does. Any direction we want to give? Looks like we don't have any direction. So great job. Mr. Stedman.
If I may interlude here and say that I've let reps know revenues of importance now. I've been informed that Director Rudescu will have to leave around 20 after the hour. So we do have closed session also scheduled for today. So next up will be Rosa with the presentation.
We'll work as expediently as we can. So on to item 17, first public hearing on the proposed budget. Go ahead, Rosa.
Good afternoon, members of the board. This is our first draft of the 24-25 budget. And with this first slide, I'm just going to go over it. I'm going to be reviewing these items, the budget development, budget in brief, revenues, expenses, our structure, and some of our budget schedules. Next slide, please. So our budget starts in January, meeting with management and the division supervisors. We take a look back at what we've done in the past. We have about a month for the divisions to turn in their budgets. We did our workshops in April. We had no public comments. We did three of them, one in each county. And today's our first public hearing for the draft. And we're looking at our second public hearing in June, and our fiscal year begins July. So these are some of the highlights of our budget. Total budget is going to be about $22.4 million, which is an increase of about 10%. Our operating budget is $8.3 million, and our non-operating is $14.1 million. The proposed fee increases are 2.6. Per capita increases, we're proposing 52 cents to 55 cent increase. We would like to add two additional staff. Currently we have 32, and we'd like to add two for 34. The salary increases in our current budget as proposed are 2.6. Total assets of $423,000. $200,000 of that is is in our current budget of our resurfacing our parking lot. Then we're going to roll that over into the next year. OPEB and pension, we've increased our deposits to that. So OPEB, we're going to propose to deposit $53,000 and then $150,000 to our pension. Our emission reduction grants are about $12 million. Our plug-in Monterey Bay is $1 million. And our vehicle incentives is $400,000. And would still change out grants $300,000. And this is our total revenues, is about $18 million, with our largest coming from state grants, about 6.6, followed by the DMV fees of $4 million, and then permit fees of 3.3. And we have all these other additional categories of revenues. Next slide. Our expenditures, our largest again, is $12.5 million for grant payments, followed by salary and benefits at $6.1 million. And then, we have all these other categories of office admin expenses, vehicle incentives, our fixed assets, infrastructure. Next slide. And this is our organizational structure. The changes that we're proposing currently, air monitoring has three. We'd like to add half the air quality technician and then a full air monitoring specialist. And also add engineering currently has a half-time air quality tech. We'd like to propose a full-time air quality tech. And that would bring us up to 34 staff. Next slide, please. And then these are our budget schedules. So our operating budget is about $8.3 million. That has a 2.6% increase to permit fees. Our per capita fee increased to 55 cents, which should increase about $23,000. Then our salaries and benefits increase total is about 13%. And that's due to the pay increase of 2.6. We have a lot of new staff, so there's a lot of step increases. We have two additional full-time employees and then the increase in retirement and health benefit rates. So our, we have a projected deficit of $647,000. So this is just a list of all of our operating revenues of $7.6 million for this next fiscal year. And then this just a historical graph of where our fees have been. You can see the major source is pretty, has been pretty steady for several years. Our regular permit fees are look to be climbing up a little bit again. And then this is just a list of the fixed assets that we're proposing. Air monitoring equipment has about 81,000, the parking lot 200,000, and then we have replacing vehicles, some of our older fleet vehicles. And our non-operating budget, so this is mainly our grant expenditures, $14.1 million for this next year. AB 2766 program, $3.2 million for grants, $400,000 for the electric vehicle. AB 923 programs, $2 million for grants, $1 million for the infrastructure. The Moyer program is $2 million for the ag and marine vessels. And we have the offsite mitigation from East Garrison and our 3CE zero emission bus program is about $950,000. Wood stove change out grants, about $300,000. Our CAP program, $2 million. And our farmer is also $2 million. And then our OPEB and pension trust, $203,000. So then this just shows a projected fund balance for our general fund. So currently it would be our unreserved about $6 million. We have a designated about 20% of our budget. OPEB pension, we have reserves of $530,000. And then our building is $100,000. So our total projected fund balance at the end of June 2025 would be about $8.7 million. So that concludes my presentation. I'll take any comments or suggestions from the board.
We'll go to public comment first.
No hands raised online, nothing received to the district office, and no one in the boardroom.
Questions or comments from the board? Hearing none, do we have a... So hold public hearing, provide staff direction. So we're okay. All right. That's it for item 17. We'll move on to item 18. Consider rescheduling June 19th Board of Directors meeting. Be Mr. Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Really quickly, we knew this when we set out the schedule earlier this year in February, but we do have a conflict on June 19th with a federal holiday. It's my understanding that Monterey County and maybe Santa Cruz County are also on holiday. And knowing how difficult it is to get this board to meet on different days, I am presenting it to the board now that we, if you want to have an alternate day, that we're proposing that the following week can be a placeholder. Now we can send out announcements and make sure, or previous week. It's up to the pleasure of the board or any other day. We could also take it, and I'd look to council for this, if we could do this by a doodle poll or something like that.
Yeah, a doodle poll for scheduling purposes is fine.
But I'll leave it to comments from the board on whether or not they can make the meeting, or we're not off that day. So just put it that way.
Questions, comments?
City of Sand City is working.
Okay. Is everyone okay with the doodle poll then? Is that kind of what was out there suggested, or do we want to retain the date, or anybody have strong feelings?
I was just going to say I'm fine with retaining the date if others are. We don't have days off.
Director Eskew?
I won't be available on the 26th. The county is officially off on the 19th, but I'm happy to attend the meeting on the 19th, and I would not be available on the 26th.
But the week before. But they're at 6.
I'm fine retaining it. personally.
A doodle poll is okay. If the majority is here, then I can be available as well.
We'll send out a doodle poll.
Okay. Agreeable. Did I do a public comment? Maybe I think I did it out of order there.
And maybe you
have. I don't think I did.
Include June 12th as an option on the doodle poll. I would also be available June 12th.
Okay. So June 12th, June 19th. All right. Just got to make sure we get a quorum. All right. And then public comment.
Online and nothing received at the office and no one here in the boardroom.
Appreciate that. That means we are adjourned from our regular meeting and we will go into closed session. Thank you.
I was going to do a quick readout. That's okay. We will adjourn from closed session and there won't be any reportable actions for today.